Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Peak State Pandemonium, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com, where we take you down memory lane for a look at professional wrestling the way it used to be, with conversations from those who paved the way. And now the GWH Radio Network presents Peak State Pandemonium.
All right, welcome to Peace State Pandemonium for Thursday, May 16th, 2013. This is Michael Norris. As always, I am joined by my illustrious colleagues, Jerry Oates and Bobby Simmons. And before we get into this, if we sound a little subdued tonight, a little down tonight, a little off-kilter tonight, three of us lost a very close friend who was friend to, when you say millions, guys,
I think everybody ever had
a million friends. I tell you, we lost Ronnie sometime between Tuesday night and Wednesday. We don't know the exact, and it doesn't matter anyway. It's just that he's no longer with us, and Lord, I don't know of anybody that would be missed more. I know you two knew him a lot longer and a lot more intimately over the years. Than I did, but I first met Ronnie, I guess, about 81 or so, when I was coming over to do television in Georgia. And as most people know, Ronnie was responsible for getting me my current job with the Cole Brothers Circus. He opened the door for me to get my job. He trained me, and he has been my mentor since I've been there. And I just found out last Friday that I'm pretty much free to go back, or will be free to go back on the road as of June 1st. And first person I called was Ronnie, and told him when I was coming back. And I talked to him last Friday, and last thing he said before he hung up was, "I love you." And I told him I loved him, and it's just, you know, that's the way it was. And now it's. I'm glad to be going back on the road. It's bittersweet because he's not going to be out there, and I relied a lot on him, but he trained me well, and I will follow in his footsteps as best I can.
If he trains you, you can handle it. I promise you that.
He knew what to do, I tell you. And as loved as he was in the wrestling business, he was just as renowned and just as well loved in the circus industry. And that's not only with our show, but with all the shows, Ringling, everybody. Everybody was after him to come work for him. But he was very loyal to Cole Brothers, and I tell you, that's a loss that will never be filled. No matter how much the rest of us try, that will never be filled. But I know you guys knew him more on the wrestling side of it than I did, and probably had more tricks pulled on you by him than I did.
But you know, he was such an asset to an office that, of course, Bobby knows that more than I do because Bobby was in the office. But he was such an asset. In, out of the ring, he was just one of a kind guys. And he loved what he was doing. That was the beauty part of it.
He did that.
From January of 78 through 1983, I was with him every day. I mean, we were together every day of the week doing something related to the stupid business. And he, you know, Ole was the booker. Ole got all the credit. But the booking of the undercards, getting the talent for TV, going to the towns every night that you know, possibly wasn't the huge town, but the small towns and the towns that, you know, nobody else wanted to go to, you know, that's what Ronnie did. And he got very little credit for what he did. You know, when he finally left Atlanta and he went to work for Bill Watts, you know, Bill Watts can tell you how invaluable he was. Bill had guys working for him down there that had been promoting some of those towns for years. And he sent Ronnie in there just to check and see what was going on. And Ronnie found out that about half of them were skimming money from sending it back. I mean, Ronnie just he was good at what he did, and he just never got the credit that he should have got.
That's true, and he carried that work ethic over to our business with the circus as well. I mean, he was on top of everything. He made sure things got done. I said things. Something fell through the crack. He figured out a way to adapt and overcome, and you know, he was invaluable. And I am so grateful to be able to spend the last two seasons with him and learn from him and watch him and see how he does things and everything. And it just, I told Bobby, and I think I put on Facebook, I have never met anybody in my life that attacked life the way he did. And that's the way Ron went at everything. It was, he woke up in the morning with, what can I do now? What can I do? What can I do? How can I make a difference? And, you know, just like everybody else, Ron had his days where he didn't feel good or something was bothering him, you know, or he was down about something or something, but you let somebody walk in front of him, and that all went away. He pushed that to the back, and that smile beamed on his face. And
people can hear that.
What in the world is that?
Hello. Yes.
But,
I am. I'm actually,
you know,
on the radio.
He just lit up, you know, the room he was in.
I'm going to be on the radio at about 10 o'clock. Can you
talk
me back?
Talked and talked about the circus and everything, and just, you know, I don't know anybody that loved life.
Okay, I mean, are you okay?
He was just fantastic. And that's something I think we can all learn from.
Hang on one second.
Hey, Michael.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm going to have to put you on mute for a minute. I got to catch another line right quick.
That's fine. Not a problem. Not a problem.
Right.
But that's just the way he approached things. I'm sure he was the same way in the wrestling business.
And in the church.
And, he was so wonderful to live with, or be around, and to learn how to live. It's just unbelievable.
I'm sure he ran into more snags than what y'all do than what he did in the business. Wouldn't you think?
Well, probably some similar ones. You know, you show up and, you know, he wasn't involved, and we aren't involved with the show part of it as much as, you know, he was in the wrestling business. I mean, when he was running it.
Getting permits and something's got to be moved,
yeah,
and this and that.
But, you know, that's the good thing about us going to places annually. You know, we know what to expect. We know who's going to give us a hard time, what we've got, you know, what's going to be difficult. And we work on those things up front and get those out of the way. But for the most of the communities we visit, we've been coming there for years. So, you know, it's pretty well cut and dry.
Right.
Everywhere, every once in a while you run into a snag, but you get a new fire marshal that's deciding he wants to build a reputation and he's going to Barney Fife you to death, but
oh yeah.
You know what I'm talking about.
Oh please.
But you know, Ron knew everybody. The good thing, when he went into Louisiana, from him working down there with Watts, he knew a lot of people. He knew a lot of police chiefs and fire marshals and, you know, building inspectors and people like that he dealt with when he was booking down there, or helping book down there with Watts and dealing with all that stuff. So, you know, you throw Ron West's name out there and everybody just kind of, their ears go up, and it kind of opens the door for you. And a lot of that's going to be missed too, because just Ron figured out a way to make whatever work, you know, whether it was we'll get a chainsaw and cut down a tree that's in the way, you know, or whatever. That was him. And
how long was he with Cole Brothers?
This would have been his 12th or 13th year, or this was his 12th or 13th year. So he started with him. I think he was 53, 54, around the same age I am now. And he's just turned 65 last year, so he was with them 12 or 13 years. He was with another small circus for a few months when he first started in the circus business, and Cole Brothers kind of stole him away from him when he's been with him. He goes back as far as when they were still Clyde Betty Cole brothers, always that way. So he's been with him. He was out of the marketing department. He's probably been was with them the longest as far as what we do, the marketing directors. And
well, I know they're going to miss him.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. They already do. I know personally I will miss him because he was, like I said, he was my mentor. And, you know, if I got stuck on something or needed advice, he was just a phone call away. And usually during a season, we'd be close enough to where we could get together three or four times during the season and go have dinner or meet for lunch or you know, just something like that. And that's the part I'm going to miss because I was just always in awe of Ronnie, and just sitting and spending time with him was just a blast. Just you know, he had so many stories to tell, and he was so down to earth and so humble. He didn't mind, you know, laughing at himself, some of the things that he did, some of the things that happened to him over the years, and just he just laughed at everything, you know. That was his way of, you know, going through life. He saw the good part of everything, no matter what it was. You know,
he had a great personality.
Yeah, oh, yeah, just yeah. Absolutely. And I used to tease him about how, you know, he had that East Tennessee accent of his. And
yeah.
I used to tease him all the time about it, but he was so funny. And just never met a waitress he didn't like or fall in love with.
Oh, that was right.
Oh, man. He was so great to go out and just watch him work with the waitresses or whoever, the people in the booth next to us, and watch him work and give away coupons and tickets and promote the circus, just the grassroots stuff, as he called it. And that was the main thing he taught me. And that makes a big difference in what we do, is just getting that excitement up. He used to call it recruiting our cheerleaders. You know, if you get somebody, you know, a couple of booths of people excited in a restaurant, you know, they'll go home the next morning, they'll call their friends, and they'll spread the word. And that's how you build it. That's how we draw crowds. You know, we put up posters, and we go on the radio, and we go on television, we run ads in the newspaper. But the bulk of how we draw our business is word of mouth, building that excitement that the circus is coming. And that was Ronnie. I mean, you know, you'd want to run away and join the circus if you sat and talked to them for 15 minutes. And a lot of us did. Myself, Tom Ernesto, Dundee, Juanita Timms, and Brian Green, we all from the wrestling business, we all ran away and joined the circus.
Where are you going to start, Mike?
Newport, Rhode Island.
Newport, Rhode Island.
That's where I've got to be on June 1st. And when I talked to Bobby earlier today, I said that was as furthest north as I've gone. But that's actually 60 miles south of Boston, and I was 25 miles outside of Boston last year. So this is not quite as far north as I was last year. But,
so you lied to me. That's what you're saying?
That's basically what I'm
saying.
Okay. I'm used to it.
I'm sorry, fellas. I had to jump off.
You're used to being lied to.
I had church business. I had to grab on another phone. So y'all were talking about Ronnie and about people and the way he talked to people. Jerry, we was in Mobile here. I guess it's been 5 or 6 years ago. He met us here in Atlanta and rode with us. And we were we went and ate supper one night. We went to Walmart. And we got out of the van, and there was a woman coming out of Walmart pushing a buggy, and she was a fairly attractive woman. And she got close to us, and Ronnie said, "Excuse me, ma'am, how's your mom and them doing?" And the lady said, "Pardon me?" He said, "How's your mom and them?" Said, "They're doing okay." And the woman just kind of looked at him and said, "Well, yeah, mama's doing good. Said she's had a few problems, you know, with her hips, but she seems to be doing okay." Next thing I know, Ronnie's pushing this woman's buggy, and they're heading out across the parking lot. So we just went on in, and I sat down on the bench inside there just kind of people watching. Well, a few minutes later, he'd come back in. And here come another woman out, you know, pushing the buggy out. And he stopped her, and he said, "Ma'am, pardon me, where are they filming the movie at?" And the woman said, "Pardon me?" He said, "Aren't they filming a movie here?" Said, "You look like a movie star." Here he's got her buggy, and off across the parking lot they go.
They thought he worked there.
He never met a stranger. Never met a stranger. But the funniest thing that happened that whole trip was we had two Japanese guys, and I don't know their names. They're photographers, and they come every one of them comes every year. He comes over to Mobile. He gets to the United States in March to come to Mobile. He stays long enough to go to the Cauliflower Alley Club, and then he goes back to Japan. And young kid, nice kid, but he had these two kids there, and we're in the van, but we're giving them a ride back to the hotel. And Ronnie's talking to them, and he says, how would you like nice American girl, maybe, 14, 15? And neither one of them spoke very good English, and they kind of looked at him, and he said, American girl, and he started making gestures like a big-chested girl, and these two little Japanese guys got with the program. They were like hopping up and down on the seats and smiling, going, yeah. So Ronnie built this up for about a couple of miles, and then finally he said, maybe we can't come up with a girl. He said, but how about a young boy? These two guys started talking in Japanese, and we have no clue what they were saying to each other. But I know they were trying to get out of that van so fast when it stopped and the door opened, one of them took a bump from the seat all the way to the concrete, landed on his back, all the way out of the van on the floor. And, I thought the kid might be hurt. Ronnie come out of the back seat of that van, straddled him, and was screaming at him, sell it, sell it, sell it. So you just never knew what he was going to do.
Well, it was funny, but now it wasn't funny when it happened. We were, this was 2 years ago, my first season, and I was in Cherry Hill, New Jersey, and Ronnie was over on another part of New Jersey, but he came over and we were going to have lunch together and just kind of spend the day together. He wanted to check on some of the things that I was doing and everything. So we ended up at the Cherry Hill Mall, which is a huge mall in Cherry Hill, New Jersey. And we're walking through, and Ronnie decides he wants an ice cream. So we find a Dairy Queen or whatever it was. It was in the mall. It's right there by the food court, and he gets his ice cream and his drink, and I step up the counter and get my ice cream and my drink, and I turn around, and Ronnie's nowhere to be found. So I think, well, he's gone over there and found him a seat somewhere, and I walk over towards the food court, and there I see him sitting with this little short lady who was maybe, she was under 5 feet tall. She was sitting in a chair, and her feet didn't touch the ground. But her breasts were halfway across the table. So Ronnie's sitting there. She's on the telephone, and he's feeding her ice cream. Now, this is a total perfect stranger. So I walk up and sit down with them, just kind of observing what's going on. And I pick up from the conversation this lady's having on the phone that she's talking to her husband. The whole time Ronnie is feeding her ice cream. She hangs up the phone. She said, oh, I'm sorry, I was talking to my husband. He just got back from Iraq. And I told Ronnie, I said, Ronnie, let's get out of here before we get killed. I said, if I don't want to die in New Jersey, if I'm going to die somewhere, let it be in Atlanta, but I do not want to die in New Jersey. But we sat there another 30 minutes, and her husband shows up, and Ronnie stands up and shakes his hands and tells the man what a beautiful wife he's got. And we finally left. if those people... Your only thing that saved you is those people thought you were crazy.
And that accent he has.
Yeah, and he did that all the time. He did that all the time. So I'm like, Lord, we're going to get killed. But people just took it, because they never knew how to take it. And he was so self-depreciating that he made fun of himself as much as anything else, and just people just automatically took to it. And I just, I don't know. The world's not going to be the same without him, I tell you.
I hear that.
Well, guys, we got a caller on the line here from the Dallas area. I want to get on the phone with us, or get on the line with us. Hold on real quick. Caller from Area Code 214, you're on the line. Go ahead.
Hey, fellas, what's going on?
Tom Jr., how are you?
Good. I'm real good. How are y'all doing?
All right. I know you can tell some Ronnie West stories.
I'll stop. Oh, the stories, yeah. Poor Ronnie. Oh, stop. He was a lot of fun to be with. He really was.
Yes, he was.
He just full of life. having a good time. That's what he used to say all the time. He says, I'm going to have a good time, and he did.
Yep.
He lived it to the end.
Yeah, you couldn't help but be in a good mood around him, no matter what was going on.
He's rolling every time.
Well, where are they going to bury Ronnie?
I haven't found that out yet. I haven't talked yet. I've heard a couple of different things, but I haven't talked to Brett or Rodney yet. I heard today through one of our booking agents that the boys were going to have him cremated. But that was due.
I was fixing to say he's fading out on me. Is it me or y'all?
You're fading, Tom.
Oh, it's me. Can you hear me now?
There you go.
Yeah,
that's good.
Okay, I'm back with you.
I kind of got some roundabout information today. I don't know. You know, how much really to say, and because I'm not absolutely 100% positive, but Rodney and Brent are up there. His two sons are up there. They have, you know, they've got Ronnie's stuff. They cleaned the room out and so on and so forth. They did do an autopsy, and I'll kind of hold off on that till I know for sure what my information is 100% correct. But they'll be bringing him back to Cleveland, Tennessee. Now, in what state they bring him back, I'm not sure yet. I think there's probably a good chance that he will be cremated, but that's you know, not only is that probably I don't think it's necessarily because of the condition he was in. I think it's probably because of financial reasons. I do know it's a federal law. You cannot cross state lines without embalming a body, and that could get very costly if you do it out of state and then have it shipped somewhere else. So I really don't know what they're doing, and I don't want to go, but the service will be in Cleveland, Tennessee. It'll be one day next week. I'm not sure when exactly. I will be going up there to do that. As far as I know, it'll be me and Jimmy Powell, but I haven't talked to Brent or Rodney yet to know for sure exactly what the final plans are.
Yeah, well, like I said, I talked to one of the booking agents, and he said he had heard that, and I don't know if it's true or not, so I'm not going to say much about it until I know for sure.
Yeah.
I just know that Ronnie will be missed.
Yes, he will.
Yesterday was the hardest day. That was the last thing I expected to hear, because I spoke with him on the phone at about between 5:30 and 5:45 on Tuesday evening. It was the last time I talked to him. He sounded like he was taking a nap, and he didn't quite know who I was at first, but then after a second he realized who I was, and we talked for a second, and I said, I'll call you after a while, Ronnie. Okay, Tom, good job. And that's the last time I spoke with him. And that was about 5:45 on Tuesday.
Well, if we can change gears for just a second, since Tom called, I'm glad he called. This weekend, they're going to be doing the inductions into the Pro Wrestling Hall of Fame up in upstate New York. And I know Joyce Grable from LaGrange, Georgia, is going up. She's being inducted as a female wrestler. But Tom's going up to accept on behalf of his dad. The Assassins are being inducted.
That's great.
Yeah, I'm leaving tomorrow. I'm going up tomorrow. And I'll be there Friday and Saturday. I'm picking my daughters up on the way up, and we're going up and spend a couple days with the boys.
That's I can't think of any two guys that deserve it anymore.
No, that's for sure.
Is Jody making the trip up, Tom?
Yes, I think he'll be there. I talked with him about a month ago, and he said he would be there.
Good.
So I'll see him when I get up there tomorrow.
Good.
I just wanted to give you guys a shout. I'm thinking about Ronnie.
Yeah,
I don't know what else to say, guys. I'm just
I know.
I'm kind of in shock right now because Ron West is the reason I'm working for the circus. It changed my life around it. So.
Yeah.
He'll be missed.
Yep, he certainly will.
Well, he taught us well, Tom, and we can we'll never fill his shoes, but we can certainly follow in his footsteps. You know what I mean?
No, we can sure try. Go that way,
yes,
the fun way,
yes,
you know.
Yeah.
I learned a lot from him, and I have a good time like he did.
Yep.
You know,
that's the whole key to it.
He
that's
was just fun, you know. And he told me all the time, he said, I want to have fun. That's just the way I want to be. He did. He really did.
Well, that's the way to do it. I mean, that's you know, we put in a lot of miles and a lot of hours with this stuff, and you can't, you know, if you don't have fun, it'll drive you crazy. So I'm going to have fun, too. Hopefully
I know I'm going to.
Before the season's over with, you and I'll have some fun together.
Sounds good, buddy. We can do it. But
all
hey,
right,
guys,
Tom,
I'm going to jump
care.
Off here, guys. Thank
all
you guys
right.
a lot, man.
Tom, be
Keep
safe on the
Tom.
Road, man. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I'll see you guys soon.
All right.
Bye-bye. Thanks, Tom.
Bye. Yeah, bye, buddy.
Well, guys, we'll take a quick break here and I kind of had a theme for tonight, and we may do it, we may not do it. We'll just see what happens when we come back off break. Let's pay some bills, and we'll be right back.
Wrestling fans, Anarchy Wrestling Television tapings are the second and fourth Saturdays of every month at 4236 Level Grove Road in Cornelia, Georgia. For more information on Anarchy Wrestling and on the shows to watch the television product and a whole lot more, go to anarchy-wrestling.net. That's Anarchy Wrestling, the second and fourth Saturdays of every month in Cornelia, Georgia.
If you're hurt, get the money you deserve. If you're in pain, get the money you deserve. At Terry and Peterman, we're personal injury attorneys who take a professional, thorough approach to your accident and injury claims. Don't call some long-distance law firm or satellite office. Don't trust your claim to just anyone. For a free consultation, call the law office of Terry and Peterman today, 229-247-0386, or go online at www.terryandpeterman.com. The law offices of Terry and Peterman, making things right.
Whether you're having an autograph session, personal appearance, or live event, we got just the person you need to contact for all of those needs. SBI Bookings is home of some of the best stars in the wrestling industry today. They provide you with the best talent this business has to offer, from Kevin Nash, Larry Zbysko, Scott Steiner, and many, many more. So who will you contact next time you're planning an event? The men of SBI Bookings. Check them out at sbibookings.com.
Do you remember Tommy Rich? What about Ray Gunkel or Gordon Solie? Can't get those nasty Anderson brothers out of your head? Well, you can catch them again at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Who was on the first card you attended? Who was it under that mask? Remember the first Omni Spectacular or the big main events at the Bell Auditorium? What happened in Columbus on my birthday? Find out at GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com. Whether you want to get back some of your past, or maybe you just want to find pro wrestling in your area, check out GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com.
Before we go any further, I meant to bring this up last week, and I forgot. Jerry, I'm always thinking of new television programs to get us involved in, and I found one for you.
What's that, sir?
It's the Tybee Island version of Naked Castaway. Have you seen this show?
No.
It's on the Discovery Channel. They take this guy. It comes on, I think, on Sunday nights. They've taken this guy who is some former British Air Force or whatever it is, and they put him on a deserted island with no clothes, with nothing but a camera.
I've seen the commercials for that.
They go around for 30 days, however how long it is, and I thought, well, that'd be a great job for, let's have a show with Jerry for Tybee Island on that way. They couldn't put, you couldn't use Bobby and I. They don't make cameras with wide enough lenses. Just
jeez.
And nobody would want to watch us run around naked anyway. So. So I thought that'd be a good idea for you to tie the island
well,
around the way.
I appreciate you keeping me in mind, sir.
Oh, man, what is television? They've got too many channels now.
Well, you know, we're really getting off base now. But that's like that show Survivor. I've never watched one episode of it.
I hadn't either, Bobby.
But if you make me, if you're trying to spoon feed me and make me believe that these people are on this island with nothing, when you got cameras recording them, which means you got electricity recording them, and the cameraman and the host of the show, they're not there with nothing. So that means somewhere off camera there's a trailer with a caterer and whatever else they need. I mean, this is just, and people just eat this stuff up. I don't get it.
That's like all that reality TV show. Come on,
yeah.
Man.
I think what they ought to do, though, instead of spreading these out over so many different, they ought to just make a reality channel and just put all those shows on one channel. And, but
yeah,
I have
a lot of problems.
But they're so cheap to put together as opposed to regular sitcoms or drama shows. That's why all the networks are going with them. But I don't know. There's certain ones I don't really call them reality. I watch more like I haven't been watching Swamp People all that much this year because it's been on opposite. A new show I found, and I don't know how old it is. It may have been on for several years, but it's on the Travel Channel called Mysteries at the Museum. And that you know, they go into a lot of the history and stuff like that. It's not.
Debbie watches that. Yeah.
Stuff. It's a great show.
Mysteries at the Museum.
I love that.
Yeah, they got, you know, I don't know. Some of this stuff, and the shows that I like on TV, like I still like the dramas and stuff. Every time I get into one, they cancel it and say it's no good. I think it's great, and everybody else say, well, it's no good, we're canceling it. So
yeah.
I guess my taste is at the wazoo anyway. So.
But anyway, I'll let you know when the contract's ready for you to sign for that.
You can be my agent?
Yeah.
You can be like, Charlie, you get first count, right?
Exactly. Oh, man. But anyway, what I wanted to kind of talk about this week was, and Jerry, this, as I told you in the email, this will fall more on you than Bobby and I, because you traveled more than we did. You worked in many more territories than we did, and I just wanted to kind of go into the logistics of what it was like to be in a territory and decide whether you decided or whether the promotion decided that it was your time to go. What all was involved in that? Most of the territories, did you decide to leave, or did when it was your turn time to go?
Most of the time, I chose to leave when I was out there for Watts. Oregon, I chose to leave there. I chose to leave Charlotte. I did not choose to leave Dallas. But it was a wonderful, exciting time. It was, you know, you're going to a new place. You're going to be around guys that you hadn't been around before. You're going to be, you know, new fans, new buildings, new bookers. My biggest disappointment was in 1973. Well, actually, it was like November of 72. Leo Garibaldi called me and said, would I be interested in coming to Dallas? I was in Georgia. Oh, wait a minute. 73. Yeah, I was in Georgia. And he said Fritz was going to retire. And they needed a young baby face. And I said, sure, you know, because I knew Leo. I met him when I was a kid. So, and I said, sure, I'd love to come out there. So I went out there and it was exciting. We went out there and got us a place to live, and Leo did everything he said he was going to do. Well, the only thing about that territory then, it was like three different territories. Fritz ran Dallas and Fort Worth, and they had some spot shows around there. And then you go to San Antonio and Corpus Christi, and Joe Blanchard ran that. And then you go to Houston, and Paul Bosch ran that. So it was like three territories.
Right.
I didn't really like that because, you know, San Antonio was kind of a cliquish situation, you know. And Paul Bosch ran Houston the way, you know, he ran that. You know, he would bring in his own talent, too. Of course, we would go there from Dallas, but, he would bring in different people like Wahoo and Mascaras and, you know, people he... Of course, he'd been there so long, he knew what was drawing Houston, and he ran it right, and he was a great payoff man. So that Houston was all right. But it was three territories, so I was there 3 months, and I was getting over, I mean... really, really good in Dallas and Fort Worth. Down in San Antonio, Corpus, it was so-so. Houston, he used to be good there. So I was there 3 months, and it was on a Wednesday, and Leo called me. He said, "You're in San Antonio tonight, right?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "How about swinging by the Sportatorium before you leave town?" I said, "Okay." I got the phone. I told my wife, I said, "I'm just to get my notice." She said, "That's impossible." I said, "He's going to give me my notice." I mean, he got me over. He got me over now. I mean, I did what he asked, and I produced for him, and I got over. So he calls me out there in the arena. He said, "Do you have any idea why I called you down here?" I said, "Yep." He said, "Why?" I said, "You just give me my notice." He said, "Well, it's not me." He said, "It's Fritz." He said, "Do you have any idea why?" I said, "Yeah, because you got me over." He said, "You're exactly right." He said, "He can't stand it. He's going to come back." He couldn't stand it. So
yeah, that was the bad thing about promoters also being former wrestlers or active wrestlers.
Right. And, you know, he said, "I feel so bad about this. I'm the one that, you know, suggested bringing you out here, and you moved all the way out here." And he said, "There's nothing I can do about it." I said, "Well, I know it's not your fault." So I left there, and I went back to Georgia. I'll have to go ahead and bring this up again. My first night back, I was in Columbus, and that's when me and the big boys.
Welcome home.
Isn't that the truth, Bobby? Isn't that the truth?
Welcome home.
I almost cried like Ray Charles when I found out.
Jeez.
You know, I've been gone. I've been out in Texas on top, and I'm coming back there. I ain't one of McGuire twins. So
yeah, but at least you were in a special main event.
Oh, there's no doubt about that. Oh, it was special, all right. I still have nightmares about that. That's almost as bad as the T-shirts. But.
Oh, jeez.
So,
now you mentioned your wife Kathy. Did she go with you to every territory that you went? You traveled in?
Everywhere I went.
You traveled to?
Everywhere I went.
Oh, good.
So I come back to Georgia in 73. Stayed. I came. Let's see, January, February, March, April. I came back in May, and I stayed until sometime in 74, and. How I went to Kansas City, I don't know. How did I go there? Let's see. Y'all were running in 73 and 74, wasn't you, Bobby?
Yeah, I know that's when Harley told Ted, you know, told you to tell Ted to get out of here.
Yeah, that's right. So was Harley doing the booking here then, Bobby?
No, I think Harley, when I first went over, Yeah, he was. He was booking here because when I went to work for Barnett in November of 74, Harley was the booker.
Okay.
And he stayed about two more months, and then Tom came in.
Okay, so he says, look, he said, "You want to go to Kansas City?" I'd been here, you know, and being from here, you know. I said, "Sure." So I go to Kansas City, and my last night, I was in the Omni on a Thanksgiving night, and then Kathy and I headed out that night. We drove to Mississippi and went on out there, and I enjoy that. So that's when things were going squirrely where Bobby and Ted were. So Harley, he told me, he said, you need to get your brother out of here. He said, I'll get him out of Kansas City. So he got him booked out there, and then we stayed out there, I guess, a year and a half. And I enjoyed it out there. It didn't make a lot of money, but we enjoyed it. I mean, it could have been a lot better. You know, I don't know why they did it the way they did, but we enjoyed living out there. And of course, had some long trips out there. I mean, long trips. I mean, long. But you got to see some states out there, anyhow. I don't know if y'all either. Have any of y'all ever? Either one of you guys ever been to Kansas?
No. I've heard it's so flat out there. You can, if you broke down the road, you could knit something before somebody got to you.
You could, and there's really, you got Kansas City, Kansas. You got Topeka and Wichita. That's it. I mean, the rest are small towns. I mean, and they're far apart.
Oh.
And so we stayed out there, and while we was there, Ted went to Japan. And then, if you talk to people that was in this business, and if they ever said they don't have any regrets, well, I look back, and I have some, not a whole lot. I mean, a lot of them was my choices, whether they were right or wrong. There's a territory that I missed that I wanted to go to. I wanted to go to San Francisco, but I never got out there. I always wanted to work for Shires. Heard he was good, good to work for. He was hard-nosed, but that didn't bother me because I'd worked for Watts, and then you much hard, more hard to work now.
I'm surprised with the time you went to that you were in Portland that you did at least make a couple shots down there, because I know Owen and Shire traded talents back and forth.
Yeah, I was out there, and I don't know when Shire stopped running. I was out in Portland in '78.
I think he'd stop by then. I think 77 or 78 is when he. When did Maine die? What year did Moondog Maine die? That was pretty much the end of Shire's run out there.
Bobby, didn't Maine leave here and get killed?
Yeah,
he left here.
He was in L.A.
He was on the way. If I'm not mistaken, he was on the way back from Las Vegas, or he was on the way to Las Vegas. I think is what I heard.
Did he get killed on the interstate? Run over? Got killed in a car wreck or something?
It was a car wreck. It was a car wreck.
The one that got run over, that was outside the car that got run over, was Eric the Red, Eric Hansen.
He got killed in Florida, didn't he?
Florida, yeah. That's Florida.
Yeah, that's correct. That is correct.
Lonnie's younger brother, Moondog's younger brother, Shane, he comes to Vegas to Cauliflower Alley. I met him years ago at Dean Silverstone's.
Lonnie's brother?
Moondog's younger brother. He looks just like him. He's just a younger version of him.
Did he ever work?
No, never did. Never did.
Love the dog.
And but he is. I've gotten pretty close to him and just communicating and talking back and forth. And nice guy. He's got. I don't even know who he works for. But he's got a job where he travels a lot, but. I saw him back in April in Vegas. He's a nice guy.
So we left Kansas City. How did that work?
You came back here.
We came back here.
And I can tell you where you was your first night back on a Tuesday night. I can tell you where you was.
You're telling me a tale.
Fitzgerald, Georgia.
Oh, come on, Bobby.
You certainly was, because I refereed that night. That was the first time I'd ever been in a ring with you, and I don't know why that sticks in my head, but it does. But Fred ran that town that night, and you and Ted teamed up that night, because that's the first time I'd seen Ted. Because Ted, and I'll tell you why I remember this, because Ted came back, and you guys didn't ride together, and I asked you where he was, and he said, oh, he'll be here in a minute. And that's the first time I ever seen him in the Corvette. He had that red Corvette. Got a memory like an elephant, man.
You know stuff about like that, like you just said, Bobby, and I'm sure you're the same way, Mike. There's some things you can remember like it was last night.
I remember when y'all, I just don't know why, but I remember that.
And see, I don't no more remember that than a man in the moon.
Yeah.
So we come back to Georgia. So, no, yeah, we're here. Then we went to Kansas City, then we come back. Yeah, we're back here now. So we go to Japan, and that's as they lose in Japan, that's when Barnett got rid of Tom and brought in Ole. So when we come back, we don't have a job. So how did that work? Oh, yeah. Ted, I went to Korea for another week. Ted, come on home. He didn't want to go to Korea. He didn't want to go to Hawaii. So I went on to Korea, so I come back. Him and my wife picked me up at the airport in Columbus. As soon as I get off the plane, instead of saying, he said, we ain't got a job. That's what Barnett told me, things would be good and better and different. I said, I guess it's different. But anyhow, so he said, Bill Watts wants you to call him tomorrow. I said, I ain't calling Watts. So I said, I said I'd never go out there. So I said, where are you going? He said, I don't know. So he says, well, they want you to call him. So the next morning, Ralph called me and said, Bill Watts is waiting for you to call him. So I said, I ain't going out there. So, you know, you'd have heard about all those trips. So I said, what am I going to do? So I called him. He talked to me and said what he would do for me. And he did. He did everything he said he would do. And did you work around him, Bobby?
I worked around him when he had points in the Atlanta office.
Right.
And he would come in here every time Ole would get mad and want to go to the sawmill or do something else. They'd bring Watts in to book.
Bobby.
He'd come in here. He'd stay here for 3 or 4 days, and he'd go back and take care of his own stuff. But I mean, I was around him a little.
So
I told him. I saw him in Mobile this year. He came to the reunion this year. I told him. He asked me, when's the last time we saw each other? I said, the last time I saw you, I was following you around taking the nasty notes off the doors you were pinning up for Barnett all over the office.
What was I going to say? So you didn't actually work for him?
Never worked for him, no.
Okay, well, I don't know how he was when you was around, but I'll tell you, well, wait a minute. I know my mother-in-law was sick. Kathy's mother was dying here in Savannah, and I had been here quite a while. And he told me, he said, you know, it's time for you to move on. But he said, I swear to God, he said this. He said, you know, I understand your situation. I know you need to be here. And so when he was booking here.
Yeah. Yeah.
This could have been part
of the time he was here, yeah.
He was booking, and then that's when he left and Harley come in here. Is that right?
No, that was before I got when he was booking here.
Yeah,
that was before I got
that's
here.
That's right,
yeah.
So Jerry. Yeah, when the split happened, Watts was down with Graham, and that's when they sent him up to Atlanta, and he was booking.
Yeah,
he brought in Shane and. Tim Woods came back, and a bunch of the Florida guys came up to start working in Georgia. And Watts was booking at that time.
So when Watts comes in, you know, he said, but you can stay. I said, I appreciate it. But then her mother, she'd, you know, have a comeback. She'd get bad. And so that's when Harley come in. He took me to Kansas City. That's when Ted come out there. So we come back to Georgia, and then I take off and go to Louisiana. And I stayed out there a year. And I enjoyed it. I really did. Even though the trips were long, I mean, there was a good crew there. Cox was there. Murdoch was there. Then later on, John Tolis come in. I mean, it was a good crew. It was good crew. And it was drawing. And he used me super well. I mean, just like he said he would. He used me on top and you know, had great guys to work with, like Murdoch and Cox. It was good. And then, so I'm working with Harley one night in New Orleans. That's when he was a champion. And we're getting instructions. And he says, Don Owens wants to go to Portland. Oh, what? Don Owens? So Don Owens doesn't even know who I am. He said, yeah, he said he wants you in Portland. I don't know how that come about. So he says, we'll call him tomorrow. So I really enjoyed it out there for Watts, you know, and so I said, man, John Ringley was out there. Did you met him, didn't you, Bobby?
Another guy from Charlotte?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's Crockett's son-in-law.
Right.
And John, yeah. John was out there working with Bill. And I'd fly to Tulsa on Mondays, and John would pick me up at the airport. He said, I loved him, man. He was a great guy. So I told Ringley, I said, I flew to Tulsa. I said, look, I said, I'm going to give Watts my notice. I'm going to give him a two-week notice. He said, he ain't going to like that. I said, I know. But I tried to get Bill to switch me, and he wouldn't do it, you know. I can't do that. I can't do that. So I said, okay. So anyhow, I give him a two-week notice, and Kathy and I finished up there. I drive back to Georgia. So I had bought a brand-new van when I got back from Japan, and I sold my van. And this is how crazy this is. Sold my van, now I don't have a vehicle. I'm going to Portland. So I called Jesse because I knew Jesse from Kansas City. That's where Jesse started. So I called him and his wife, and I said, look, we're going to send some stuff ahead, our clothes and her dishes and stuff. We sent that stuff ahead, and we flew out there. And they picked us up at the airport, and we stayed with them about a week or 10 days. I got me a car, bought me a new car. And so, that, now that was another great territory. I mean, that was, now you're talking about a fun territory. Short trips. Once in a while, they hit a long trip. Go down to Medford, Oregon. But we both loved it out there. And so I stayed out there, and Ted had gone to Charlotte. So I'm out there. I'm doing good. I'm making money. I'm saving money. And Ted called me one day. He said, I got you a starting date in Charlotte. And that's when Charlotte was on fire. I'm going, oh, my gosh. I'm out here 3,000 miles away. You got me a starting date. I mean, God. So it was like a month away, you know. Because George Scott knew I was in Portland. So, oh my God, I've flown way out here. I was out there 6 months. And I had some money. I saved money. I was good at saving money. So, okay. So I called Leo. Leo was in Los Angeles. I went to wrestle in Los Angeles at the Olympic Auditorium. So I'm already out there, right? So then we're going to drive back across the United States, back to Columbus. So I got booked in Los Angeles. We stayed there a week. And I worked there Friday night. Get there that night. I met Mike LaBelle. And so Leo told me that night, he said, Mike LaBelle wants you to stay. And Piper was there. I worked with Piper that night. And I said, I'm already booked in Charlotte. So I said, I can't do them like that because my brother's already there. And I said, you know, George gave me a starting date, told Ted, call me, and I said, I got to go. And I'm glad I did because L.A. wasn't doing good at that time. They had, I don't know, I don't even know what towns they ran. But so we drive back across. I got myself booked with Watts. You know, I worked for him two nights. I tell you what we did. We left Los. If I'm hogging this, y'all let me know.
No, go.
So I wrestled in Los Angeles on a Friday night. We left Los Angeles at 9:30 Saturday morning. I drove straight through to Shreveport. I'm talking about straight through. I got there at it was 3:00 Monday morning. Drove all day Saturday, all Saturday night, all day Sunday. I didn't think I'd ever get through Texas. That's the biggest state I ever crossed. I'm telling you, that place, my God. So we got into Shreveport that night. That was a Monday night. It was Monday morning. Rested up. Wrestled there. That wrestled in Shreveport. I wrestled in Shreveport. Tuesday night, Jackson, Mississippi. Wednesday night, New Orleans. Thursday night, and then I went to Columbus. And then we loaded up again and headed to Charlotte. And that was another experience. I knew just about everybody up there, but it was no matter when you come in there, it was like when we used to go to New York for McMahon Sr. You know, you had your slot and that was it. You wasn't budging from that slot. I mean, no matter what you did, that was, it was okay because we're in a semifinal every night. But we made money. But it was, you know, it was, you just locked in, you know. You know you're not going to go up, you're not going to go down, that's your slot, which I guess is okay. But I wasn't used to going in territories like that. But that
the
was,
main thing is you were making money, and I mean that's what we were all in business for.
But that was—I tell you what—I don't think they didn't have some trips up there. I mean, they had some trips up there. But when I was in Louisiana, you used to hear about guys talking about those trips to Louisiana. But it was—I don't know—it was. I just didn't mind it. I didn't. It was such a good crew. Mike George come. He finally shows up. He come in out there. Who all else was there? It was, you know, it was just my first night in the territory. I did the night we drove out there. My first night was on a Saturday night. I did two TVs that Saturday morning. That Saturday night I was in Pine Bluff, Arkansas. And Watts was there. Ken Patera walked in. He said, "You're fired." I think, oh, my God, he just fired Ken Patera. I'm done. I'm doing out of here. Ken Patera missed a Thanksgiving show and he fired him right on the spot. So I didn't see, I don't think I ever saw Ken again. But I enjoyed the change in the territories. I really did. I mean, it was, you know, you're going somewhere new and new faces and new people, and especially if they wanted you, you know, that was a big difference.
Yeah,
I worked Mobile for a short time, and then I left there and went to Montgomery, and that was an experience. I enjoyed working there, though, you know, for Bill Golden. Jimmy was there. Perez, Ramon Perez, what a worker he was.
Yeah.
Did you ever know him, Bobby?
No.
A little bitty guy, but I'm telling you, man, he was something else. But it was, you know, it was kind of a makeshift crew, but and Ted was learning, and so...
You know, you talk about the trips and the crews. You know, I don't care how long the trips were. If you were, and I know you rode by yourself a lot. If you were, whether you were by yourself or you were with someone else or two other guys or whatever, if you enjoyed your company, the trips didn't seem that long.
You know, you just really nailed it, Bobby. And see, I'm not a drinker. I have. Drink beer or whatever, but I never drank on the road. I never did any drinking on the road, especially if I was drunk. And I'm like you, Bobby. I always knew who I did. I did when I was in Louisiana. I did 99.9% of the driving.
Yeah.
So, and then whoever rode with me, that's who I wanted to ride with me.
Yeah.
I was like you. I know one night we come out of Tulsa, and I had about five guys with me. And one of them, he had one of 20 cigarettes.
Uh-huh.
He was getting ready to light it up. I said, I'm going to tell you right now. First of all, you're not going to light it up in here. And I said, furthermore, when we get back to Shreveport, you won't ever ride with me again. And he did. I told him.
Yeah.
Well, I'm not going to go to jail for him.
You got that right.
I've heard you say many times about your traveling.
Yeah, I was very careful.
I never drank one beer when I was on that road. Never. I did too many miles, man.
Yeah, I just never, and of course, I didn't like the taste of it. I just, you know, it didn't bother me. You know, there were certain people I knew that were going to drink a six-pack. You know, Ronnie West, John Walker. They were going to have an eight-pack or six-pack or whatever the Miller ponies came in. But I also knew that was all they was going to have. And I knew that they, you know, it was not going to be a problem. So that never bothered me with that. And you know, Roberto Soto, I rode with him a lot, and he would tell me, you know, if he decided he wanted to drink, he would say, hey, here, you drive home. I'm going to drink tonight.
What's
so,
wrong
you know,
with that?
I didn't have a problem with that.
But I know I've made a few trips with some guys, and I said to myself, if I ever get home.
Oh, yeah.
this won't ever happen to me again.
Oh yeah, Billy.
And I'd rather be in my own vehicle. That was just me.
Yeah.
I mean, not that I, you know, I didn't mind somebody coming along, or if I were, many a night I left New Orleans and had to go to Shreveport by myself.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a hike because some of them was going to be, I'd be in another town and some of them going another way, and
yeah,
that didn't bother me. That didn't bother me. Being by myself didn't bother me. But I was like you, Bobby. I chose and picked who I rode with.
Yeah. Yeah, Billy Spears broke me. God love him and God rest his soul. Son, he lit up one of them left-handed cigarettes, and next thing I know is we're running 100 mile an hour in a left-hand lane and we're bumping some old woman in the rear end of her car because she won't move over. And I'm thinking, Lord, please let me get to where I'm going.
That never happened again, did it?
No, it did not.
I had a job, and I wasn't going to lose my job on account of somebody else, you know. That was just me. I just loved what I was doing, and I didn't take it.
One thing I was very fortunate with, I guess, is because I drove the ring truck a lot, they let me hire Randy to, you know, go with me and do things. And, you know, me and Randy have been friends since we were just kids, and we're still friends to this day. And I guess, you know, me and him, we'd hit the road. It didn't bother us where we were going. I mean, you know, we just, I made some trips here a couple of weeks ago. I had a couple of funerals where we were pretty long trips, and he rode with me. And when he's with me, man, we don't even turn the radio on. We just talk. It's just, you know, but when you enjoy your company or you enjoy, you know, and when I'm by myself, man, I just turn the radio on or whatever. And I have one regret about the road when I was traveling is they hadn't invented satellite radio yet. That's the greatest thing since the Ice Cube.
Didn't it? Oh, I didn't tell you about when I started. I started in Florida, so... Louis Tillet was a booker down there. And he gave me my first few matches. You know, he let me work on Saturday nights and sometimes on a... I'd go to... my first match was in Fort Myers, Florida. And then I'd work on Saturdays. He let me work here. I worked with Ronnie Garland a lot. And he really helped me a lot when I first started. And so he kept telling me, you know, put me on full time, so I guess he let me get a little more experience, and so I finally got started there. And I lived in Orlando, and everybody else lived in Tampa. Now, see, here we go again. There you go, riding by yourself again.
Yeah.
So I started off riding by myself. My first night, first full week, on Wednesday, I was booked in Miami. And that's like, well, Miami and Orlando, like 250. So that's when they had, what do they call it? What kind of ply tires?
Bass ply.
Yeah. So you got to keep, when you rotate them, you got to keep those on the same side of the car. Well, I didn't know that, sir. I had an X. I go to Miami, right? I was so broke, I could. You laugh if you want to. I couldn't ride the toll road. I had to ride 441. That ran parallel to
it. Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I'm telling you, man. It was a good old straight road running right beside it. So on the way down there, my car, I hear a boop, 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 boop. Well, I got a knot in one of my tires. On the way back, I got another one bumping. You should have been in that car. You think he's riding a steam engine. So I go to Miami and lose two tires.
Oh,
it was, and they had some long trips there, man. You go to Tallahassee, and man.
Jacksonville,
West Palm Beach, Fort Lauderdale. I went to Belgrade, Florida. That's way down there in the swamps. That's when I should have started the show down there. Swamp Man. I don't know if y'all ever been to Belgrade, Florida.
I missed that.
Did you ever go down there to Florida, Bobby, at all?
I was in and out of there. I never went down there and stayed. I made that trip to Miami one time. Even on the toll road, that's a long trip.
Isn't it awful?
Oh, God.
Isn't it awful? Where did you go in Miami? What building?
I don't know.
they ran two buildings, Miami Convention Center and then Miami Beach Auditorium.
I was in the auditorium.
That's a nice building. It was beautiful down there, man. It was gorgeous. It was absolutely gorgeous. I know. When that thing happened with Splitcom, Eddie was coming up here every week, and they teamed me and Eddie Graham. They teamed me and him up a few times in Columbus, and I was partners with him. I think in Macon, they teamed us up. So he told me we was at the City Auditorium, Atlanta, and I always dress downstairs. So I was coming up the steps, and he was coming down there looking for me. He said, "Look," he said, "when you leave here, he said, I want you to come to Florida." I said, "Okay." And you know I never did, and I regret that. He asked me to come down there. He told me, he said, "You're the perfect size." He said, "You work with the big ones or the small ones?" Well, my height, you know?
Yeah.
And I didn't do it. And I always regretted that.
You'd have been good, Danny, because that was, you think about it, that was about the time that they were pushing Briscoe to the world championship. You'd have probably been their number one babyface down there.
I would have gone. He told me, he says, "I want you down there when you leave here." And you know, I never called that man. What's wrong with me, man? I'm telling you, man, you get to the fork in the road and you don't know if you should go left or right sometimes.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm sorry we didn't go to Minneapolis.
Did you have the opportunity to go? Did they ask you to come there?
No, they never did. But I'm sure we could have gone.
Oh, yeah.
But shortly after that split, and then after it all panned out, and then not much longer after that, it really didn't last a whole month longer, you know. It did a while, but it started, you know. If it hadn't changed, I would have stayed longer, you know, out there. But I couldn't see myself. I got booked in New York. I told Jesse, I said, "I want to come up to New York." He said, "Get me booked up." He said, "Okay." You know what he told me? He said, "You don't want to come up here." I had my gym. He said, "You don't want to come up here." I said, "Yeah, man, I want to come up there." So sure enough, about a week later, Pat Patterson called me. He said, "Hey, here's Pat." "Hey, Pat." He said, "You're in Detroit tonight." "What? Detroit?" I said, He said, we'll have a ticket waiting on the airport. And that was on a Friday. And the following Friday, he started giving me what towns I was in. I said, whoa, wait a minute, Pat. I said, I got a bodybuilding show I put on every year. And I said, it's the following Friday, and I have got to be here for that. He said, all right. He said, just when all that's done, give me a call. I said, I'll call you back. I never called him back. I don't think I could handle that crap. Flying all over the country every night. That's when they were really getting around, you know?
Yeah.
New York tonight, San Francisco the next night, Seattle the next night, Miami the next night. Now, who's going to do that? I talked to some guys. They was in Columbus, and they said, Ricky Hunter said, hey, the chief wants us to see you. Talking about Strongwell? He said, come down there tonight. He wants to see you. I said, okay. So I get down there, and he said, go get your stuff, man. He said, we're a guy show. I said, man, I don't want to work night, man. Go get your stuff. I said, man, go get it. So I went home, got my stuff, come back down there and work. And I was talking to those guys. Some of them said they ain't been home in 3 months. I wasn't going to do that. Of course, I don't know what kind of. I guess that's when they were making a fortune, I guess.
Sometimes, you know, I don't care how much you make. If you're not happy with what you're doing, it ain't working.
Bobby, you just nailed it. If you're out there making that money and you're miserable, see, I'd have been miserable because
it ain't worth it.
I knew what those boys were doing then.
Yep.
You know, and that wasn't me. To be honest with you, I didn't fit in with that.
Yeah.
If you know what I mean. That wasn't Jerry Oates. That wasn't Bobby Simmons. Well, that wasn't Mike Norris, I'm sure. I couldn't be around it because I wasn't going to do it. Look, I mean, I'm dead.
Not only that, but when you're around people that do that, no matter how long you've known them, you know, you could have known them 10, 15 years back before they got all into that. But once they get on that stuff, they get paranoid, and they think if you're not doing it, you're telling on them. You know, you're there to spy on them.
You're exactly right, and I was smart enough to, you know, and I had my gym, my business, I was doing good with it, and I said, you know, I could have gone and Kathy to run it, and I had a couple of guys working for me, but I'm thinking, I can't leave here for 3 months, you know, I mean. And living like that, I just couldn't. I didn't. I just chose not to do it, you know. So, and Orndorff told me that night that I worked. He said he got me in the shower there in Columbus. He said, Jerry, he said, I'm making so much money. I wake up in the morning, look in the mirrors, and I just start shaking. That's when it really personal. He got everybody's talent, you know.
Yeah.
But Bobby, is he still in Atlanta?
Who's that, Orndorff?
Yeah.
I heard he lives in Fayetteville. I guess he's still over there. I'm not sure.
Well, you know, he had a couple of bowling alleys.
Yeah, I don't think he's got those anymore.
I heard he lost them.
He fought that cancer, and I think he's in remission, or last I heard, that's what I heard, you know. But
you don't ever see him? Or?
Never see him.
Yeah, they made a fortune. They absolutely made a fortune. But if it's not for you, it's like you said, it don't matter how much money you make. Let me tell you something. I'd have been miserable.
Look at all those guys that made fortunes, like Jake Roberts, Junkyard Dog, guys like that made all that money and ended up with nothing because they put it either in their veins or up their nose.
You know, you only get one bite at that apple.
You got that right.
Don't you know they regret and look back and like, my God, what did I do? What did I do? Because some of them didn't live long enough to say that.
Everybody talks about, you know, Mike Sharp, and he spent so many years up there doing jobs on TV and doing jobs in the arenas, but I'm sure he made decent money, too. And Mike Sharp was straight arrow enough to where I bet he's well off and doesn't have to hit a lick of a snake right today.
Let me tell you, I'm sure there's quite a few of those boys that were like that wound up all right, you know. I know when I was in I was in Dallas, and Frankie King was out there. I worked a program with him, and he told me one night, one afternoon, we was up by the pool, and it was wintertime, but it was warm down there. We was like laying out by the pool. He told me, he said, "Hey, kid," he said, "I watch you in that ring." He said, "You go wind up walking down the street sideways one day." Of course, I didn't take bumps like these idiots do today, but I took bumps. I said, I was like 24. I said, "That ain't going to happen to me." Well, I got sitting here with two artificial knees. I got my right arm. It's all I can do to get it over my head. My neck screwed up. Left elbow screwed up. When you're that age, it ain't going to happen to you, you see. You're invincible. You're bulletproof.
Yep.
Well, I found out. My bulletproof vest come off a long time ago. What you think that? Oh, I saw a recent picture on Facebook of Harley. He was sitting there with a neck brace on.
Yep.
He had neck surgery back in April, just before we got to Vegas. Well, matter of fact, we got to Vegas on a Saturday, and somebody told me that morning that he had neck surgery the Friday before we got there, so that would have been the 12th of April. They went in and did some stuff on his neck.
He wasn't there, right?
No, he didn't make it. No, he wasn't there. I'll tell you something, Jerry Hardy. When's the last time you saw him?
Oh, God, Bobby Simmons. My God. Bobby. Oh, I couldn't tell you.
It'd break your heart to see him, son. His memory's just about gone. I mean, he don't, you know.
Are you kidding me?
He's a lot of things he don't remember.
Can he walk?
Well, he can, but not good. He rode around last when he was in Vegas 2 years ago. He rode around on one of them little scooters.
He don't tell me that, Bobby.
Yeah. You think about, here's another guy. He's probably one of the best bump takers I ever saw. But you think about all that crazy stuff he did for all them years. Off that top rope with that headbutt. You know, I mean, just that.
Not only that, but a lot of people don't realize that Harley had only been in the business 2 or 3 years, and he was in that horrible car wreck.
Car wreck, yeah. Life.
So he had to have had lingering effects from that as well, you know, at the beginning of his career, and then worked another 20, 25 years and took bumps right up to the end. I mean, he took some crazy bumps.
I think he's had hip replacements. hadn't he, Bobby?
Yeah, I think so.
I'm sure he's had to have his back operated on. I mean, my gosh. So. He's the only guy I ever saw wear a bump pad.
Mm-hmm. In the seat of his trunks.
Yep.
Yeah. Ernie Ladd did that too.
The other one was Brooke Bernard. He wore one.
Yeah, I remember that too, yeah.
But Harley was the first guy I saw with it. But, I mean, he took bumps. I mean, he's got to be hurting something awful, man.
Oh, yeah.
He looked real small, like he'd shrivel up or something.
Yeah, he's.
In his prime, during the time he was NWA champion, he was probably, what, 265?
Oh, every bit of that.
Yeah, at least.
So he's probably under 200 now.
Oh, come on.
I bet he is. Just looking at pictures I've seen of him lately.
Yeah, he don't look big at all.
He's not very big.
How's Ole doing? I haven't asked
not
that
good.
In a while.
Not good. I haven't seen him in a while, but Charlie has lunch with him about once a month, and Charlie said he he's in a wheelchair now, and he barely can get around. Just a lot of issues with that multiple sclerosis.
Man.
We all came out pretty good, didn't we? Regardless of how many surgeries you've had, Jerry, you're
sure. Evidently.
Yeah,
you know,
I
thank God every day. You know, my knees, they're coming along wonderful, but, they're not 100% yet. They said it takes about a year or so. But, I mean, I walk with no pain. I see some of these guys. Of course, I guess I abused my body that way, but I didn't abuse it the other way like some of these guys did.
Yeah.
Drinks every night, doing all this other stuff, man. Oh, my God. I don't know how they've lasted. You take poor Jake. How he's still alive, I got no idea.
Listen, I saw Jake in April in Las Vegas. It's the first time I can ever remember seeing him stone cold sober. He looks good. He's lost about 75, 80, 100 pounds.
Can he get around?
He looks good.
Could he get around good?
Yes, sir. Better than I've seen him in the last few times I've seen him. I'm about convinced that this Diamond Dallas Page is legit. I was really concerned that it, you know,
right,
him asking for, you know, and he supposedly he's working with this Kevin Scott Hall now, trying to do the same thing with him that he did for Jake. But Jake looks good. Had his kids with him. He's mended some fences, so I think he's on the right road now.
Well, let me tell you, Jake was talented.
Yes.
Jake is very talented. Of course, that was my generation, but I just didn't see the fascination with all that. I'm sorry. I just didn't see it.
I was afraid of it. I mean, I agree. I didn't see the fascination, but I was afraid of that crowd. I've never wanted anything that made me lose control, where I was out of control. You know, if I'm going to do something stupid, I want to be aware I'm doing something stupid.
Be able to remember it.
Yeah, I mean, that and the fact I was afraid of my mama, you know, that was another thing that I don't know.
I guess it still goes on today, I don't know.
Well, I'm sure it does. That's when they've added the steroids into that. And you just, you know, I don't care what you do or how much of a Superman you think you are. You mixing all those different types of chemicals into your body, it can't be good for you. It absolutely cannot be good for you.
Well, like I said earlier, I mean, we could sit here till in the morning, name the ones that are dead that were young.
Yeah. I mean, you can't tell me you had to have steroids to look, you know. I know that seems to be the norm now, but, I mean, you were always in great shape. Your brother-in-law, Steinborn, always looked fantastic up until, you know, his middle age when he quit working and still looked in great shape.
He still
and never
good.
Took a steroid. And, you know, it's just, you know, there were guys back in the 60s that had great shapes. You know, guys like, oh, I don't know if Earl Maynard. Were you ever around Earl Maynard?
Yes, I was.
I doubt he took steroids. Sailor Art Thomas, people like that. Just, you know.
You know the sailor didn't.
What, to take steroids? No.
He wouldn't have known what a steroid was.
But, you know, Billy Graham came along, and then everybody, he was such a sensation based on his physique.
Oh,
that everybody. Everybody thought that had to be the norm, and then everybody had to get into it.
You remember Putski?
Yeah,
Adam Putski.
Oh, yeah.
I saw a picture of him on YouTube the other night. I almost started crying. I didn't know who it was. If he weighs $150, he's lucky. Tiny man. He was a monster. He was in Texas when I was out there.
And see, he was as over as he ever was without, you know, that bodybuilder physique. You know, he was like Igor. In fact, he did the Igor gimmick for a long time.
Exactly. That's where he got that.
You know,
exactly.
Unless it's just to pump up your own ego and wanting to look good, you know, why do that to yourself? You know. But, hey, you know.
When the business was the best was really in the early 70s, early to the mid 70s.
Exactly.
I mean,
yeah, everybody didn't look alike. They didn't all have the same tattoos, the same body type. I mean, look at now. If you took 100 wrestlers now, you couldn't tell them apart for the most part because they all look alike.
Somebody, I don't know how this guy got on my Facebook thing. He you've seen him. He put this poster, he's going to be on this card, and you should have seen the guys. They all had on T-shirts, all had covered tattoos, and they had more tape on them than Ox used. That's my tape, anyhow.
And when did when you were posing for a picture or you were doing an interview that you had to stick your tongue out?
That's right. They left a bunch of lizards. So I put on there, I said, that boy, he ain't putting no more posters up. I said, it's really sad that you don't take any more pride in what you're trying to imitate. And I said, just by covering yourself in tattoos and wearing a lot of tape does not make you a wrestler. I had to do it. It made me so mad, I about went blind in that looking at that. And the sickest thing I ever seen, thanks to Bo James, sent me that website to the
Weed Eater Man.
I looked some of them up.
That's crazy. Tell me, that's the craziest thing you ever seen.
Y'all have to type in Weed Eater Wrestling Matches, and then you pull up stuff. Wait till you pull up the stuff they're doing in Japan.
Yeah, a lot of that garbage stuff originated in Japan with the light bulbs,
They were slamming them on, throwing them into the barbed wire, slamming them on those light bulbs. You ought to see the scars on those jokers' backs before they start bleeding. Now, you talking about idiots? They hadn't printed enough money for me to do that.
No, sir.
You cannot believe. I mean, for what?
Yes, because the day's going to come along when those guys can't, they're too old to do all that junk anymore. What are they going to do? They're going to go apply for a job with staples marks in their head.
Oh, they had all kind of stuff. They had, like, razor blades on boards, and they slam them on them. Y'all watch that, and you can't believe what you're seeing. You can't. But
when you watch that, the thing that gets me, why would somebody want to pay to go watch that?
Well, I'd get up and leave. I don't want. They showed one guy, Bobby, had him like tied up in the top rope and second rope with his arms. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
He's got to walk up to him and read it. You can see the blood coming off his stomach. I cut the thing off.
Yeah, Bo sent me one, and I watched part of it, and I turned it off.
I'm never
and Kyle Matthews sent me one. Kyle Matthews sent me one where a guy stabbed another guy with a box cutter in the arm. I mean, this is.
The sad part, you can get idiots to do that.
Oh yeah,
think about that part of it.
And they're probably not even getting paid,
Bobby.
And they're doing it in front of 35, 40 people,
if they're lucky.
Oh man.
Well, my wife come up with a match, and I really think we ought to try it. A pressure washer match.
Yeah.
That'd be worth the Weed Eater.
Yeah, and say we want to sell rain suits at the gimmick table.
Like Gallagher when he does the Sledge-O-Matic.
With the watermelons, yeah.
Yeah.
One match I saw in Japan, they had the one side of the ring on the ropes. They had nothing but those light bulbs. And they would take them and bust them over each other's heads. I don't know how the people in the ringside get glass in the eyes. Can you imagine doing that in the United States?
Jeez.
Oh, they do it.
Oh, come on.
Bo
yes,
told me, I haven't seen this. Bo told me they have these matches where they tape those 48-inch fluorescent bulbs like goes, over, what I'm talking
that's
about, like
what,
in an office.
Yeah, that's what this was.
They'll put
yeah.
three or four of them things together and tape them together and hit each other over the head with them.
Yep. Then they slam one another in that stuff.
Yep.
I mean, that's just...
Bobby, I wish me and you might go to a town, just say we were still working, and some guys come in there with Weed Eaters. I'd go blind.
I'd
probably fire one of them up myself and start using it.
Jeez.
They ought to bring back wash the donkey matches like they used to have in Texas. Paul Bosch used to run over. I guess it was who had Houston before him.
Tony Bourne. In Houston.
Yeah.
Morris Siegel had Dallas back then.
That's right. Was it Doc? Was it Sarpolis? Doc Sarpolis.
It could have been,
yeah.
Mike.
I know Tony Bourne and Bull Curry had, I don't know how many kiss a mule matches and wash a donkey matches and all that stuff.
But I'm telling you now, wait till these guys get past these weed eaters. They're going to come out with chainsaws next.
Oh, man.
Did you ever watch any matches, Jerry, with barbed wire on the ring?
No, sir. I would not do that, Bobby.
I refereed the only time I can remember as a kid going to the matches in Atlanta. The first barbed wire match I ever saw was Freddie Blassie and Mario Galinto.
I was supposed to say Galinto and who?
Yeah. Blassie and Galinto was in a barbed wire match. But and what they did, they ran the barbed wire around the ring post at the same level as the ring ropes, but it was maybe a foot outside the ring ropes. And they was able, and I can remember now that I remember I can see how they worked with it a little bit there. But I refereed a match in Atlanta with the Sheik and Abdullah where they had the ring was surrounded by a cage, and they put barbed wire on the cage. Son, that stuff will bite you, and you don't even have to get real close to it.
You ever fool with barbed wire?
That stuff
will eat you alive.
Yeah, and I mean, Sheik and Abdullah, you know, they did some crazy stuff anyway. But, yeah, it was that's the only time I was ever in a ring with anything like that. And it was dangerous just getting in and out of the ring. I don't see how these guys do that stuff they do.
Well, they all wind up with staph infection and wind up dying. You got to see these boys in Japan. You won't believe it. You won't believe what you're seeing.
I may have to check that out tomorrow.
Well, when you check it out, give me a call. You'll be puking.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, all you got to do is go to the Weed Eater Boys and keep going, and it'll start pulling that crap up. We ought to invest in, buy some stock in some of them Weed Eaters.
Staple guy. That's what the guy that named Necro Butcher. That's his big thing. He was in. If you've ever seen the Mickey Rourke movie, The Wrestler, he was in that, and they were stapling, you know, each other in the head with the staple gun and everything else. It's eventually going to go to, you know, somebody's going to shoot somebody in the ring, I guess.
I don't know where they can top all that. And people pay to go see that. I don't get it. I'm sorry.
All that started with, Japan started the garbage stuff, but that ECW started those, you know, diving off the balcony onto a table and all that other crazy stuff.
And I'll tell you something else. I wouldn't lay down on a table for somebody to do that either.
I mean, they've gone to such an extreme. The fans don't even, you know, they're so far away from watching a wrestling match. If you're not killing yourself out there in the ring, they just don't buy it.
You're exactly right.
They don't buy it. You know, they're not interested in, you know, holds and switches and counter holds and you know, telling a story in the ring. They want you diving off, you know, onto a chair so they can chant, you know, all kind of stuff at you. And it's I don't know, it's just crazy.
You're talking about people paying to go see all that stuff. My wife she likes to watch these shows on TV sometimes, you know, like True Stories of the ER or you get on one of the educational channels and they'll show you somebody's knee surgery or brain surgery or something. I won't even watch that.
Me either.
I'll go into another room.
Well, you couldn't go to any of these matches then, I'll tell you.
No, I couldn't.
Oh, man. There's something, Jerry. When you get off here, go to Facebook. There's something on there you got to see.
You're sick.
I'm not gonna say anything. I'm not saying anything else. It's, you just need to get, when you hang up from here, get on Facebook and go see it. You'll get a kick out of it.
It's probably Mike Norris and the weed eater.
No, it's not me. It's not me. It's a picture of you and your two favorite tag team partners.
Oh, my. I'm going to look at it right now while we're talking.
Who put it on there?
Yeah, I wanted to put Jerry Oates' tag team partners or some crap. Why is that? I just had to mention them tonight, and that's all it took. Right now.
That's courtesy of the fourth Beatle, Bo Jackson.
He been photoshopping again?
Oh, my God.
Yeah. That's a good picture of you, though.
You see how disgusted I was.
That's the NWA World Six-Man Tag Team Champion right there.
I wish we had some video of when they did the big finish.
The eight-man tag team champion.
I wish we had some pictures of the big finish when they all three threw drop kicks.
I just responded to that.
What was the finish of that match, Jerry?
I don't know. I can't
laying on the garbage and you climbing up on top waving a flag?
I can't wait to get to work tomorrow and these idiots have seen this. I'll have to leave Savannah. Bo James. Don't ever have him on this radio.
Oh, man.
Lord. King of fun, you know.
I haven't even seen it, but I can tell you what would make the picture better is if the Maguires had on a Jerry Oates t-shirt or Oates gym. That would be better.
Oh, my. That's my lowest damn thing I've been pulled on me.
Yeah, when Jerry had the gym and we were still running a little bit, everybody in the dressing room had an Oates t-shirt.
That's for sure.
Yeah, I had one right here. I don't even know if I still got it or not. I have to look. But, yeah, that was a – what a neat place he had. You never went there, did you, Michael?
No, never went there.
What a neat gym he had. They wound up with the old Atlanta TV ring that they redid and had it set up over in a corner there. And Jerry didn't have that fancy Dan equipment. He had some – Rock Hunter even made some equipment for y'all, didn't he?
He sure did. I bought a lot of stuff from Rock. He made just
had
stuff.
Some neat stuff in there and – You go down there and sit and talk, and Greg Brown was always there, and Donut was there, and it was always fun just to go by there and talk.
It was a good place. That place was good to me for a long time.
Yeah.
But things change, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Well, with the money that you make off of doing naked
Tybee Island.
Swim, Tybee Island. You open me up one in Savannah.
And my t-shirts. My t-shirt sales are booming down here.
Well, you ought to hook up with Renegade t-shirts. I'll take care of you.
Oh.
Somebody's blood pressure just went off.
Yeah, you have Charles Smith calling.
Lord have mercy.
Oh, man.
Well, the
guys,
good thing
I'm
going to
wrap it up. Go ahead, Jerry. I'm sorry.
No, at least I can laugh at myself.
Hey.
That's what it's all about, you know. Again, going back to Ronnie West, the lesson I learned from him, you got to laugh at it.
Listen.
To get it through.
The chief I work for down there, Bob Bryson, he's the chief down there at Tybee Island. He told me when he reminds me of Tom. He never gets rattled. He doesn't. He said I have fun every day, and he's got a lot on his plate. You can imagine dealing with all the policemen in the city and this and the state and this, but you never see him sweat. He's just a great guy.
You know, it took me a long time to learn, but, you know, worrying, and I still fall back on it, you know, into that bad habit every once in a while, but worrying about it doesn't change a thing.
It doesn't change
a
thing.
Sitting and sweating over it just makes it worse because you're just running your health. There's nothing you can
doing.
Do about it, so leave it alone. No. And that's my plan. But let's see if one of you guys got anything else. I'm going to go ahead and wrap it up for this evening. But next week is open at this point. I'm not going to say we're not going to do a show, and I'm not going to say we are. It all depends on the situation with Ronnie's funeral and everything, because I'm planning on going. I was going up to Atlanta Friday anyway on my way to Rhode Island because I got to spend a couple days up there and get some take care of some stuff with my daughter. But if depending on when Ron's funeral is and everything, as to whether or not we'll do a show. So everybody stay tuned to Georgia Wrestling History Notes website, and because I'll let Rich know whether or not we're going to do a show. And then the same thing the following week, depending on I'm not planning on leaving Atlanta until Friday at this point. I'm going to head to go as far as Richmond Friday, and then going into West Warwick, Rhode Island, which is where I'll be staying on Saturday. So splitting the trip up in 2 days because it's 1,030 miles drive from Atlanta to Rhode Island. So I don't want to try and do that one trip. Well, I'm planning on to, but I'll let you guys know. Hopefully we'll be able to get at least one show in the next couple of weeks. We'll play it by ear and everything. And if not, we'll start back the first Thursday in June.
Everybody understands.
We just to throw one other thing in, me and Michael talked a little bit, and I'm sure he's talked with Jerry. We're going to do a tribute show to Ronnie at some point.
Yes.
It was just a little too quick tonight. We talked and told some stories, but Bill Bowman and Joe Turner was in Tennessee when Ronnie started. A lot of folks don't know Ronnie started refereeing when he was 14. And
yep.
Bill and Joe were there. They were there when he got married. I mean, they they were part of his life, so I'm sure they've got some stories. And I'm sure after we get past this a week or two, maybe we can get one of Ronnie's sons to join us and share some stuff with us, too. So
yeah,
that's coming up in the near future, so it's something to look forward to.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And might even try and get some of the circus people. Besides those of us from the wrestling business, or in the circus business like Tom and myself, I may try and work something out to try to get some of the circus guys to join us.
That'd be great.
Yeah, that'd
be
good.
But we will certainly work on that. But guys, like I said, just I'll keep in touch with you guys and let you know what we're going to do next week and the following week and everything. But other than that, it has been great. It started on a somber note, but I think we had a good show. And I appreciate you guys, and we don't say it enough, but I love you guys. And you guys
love
are both
part
of my life.
Yeah, you love you guys too, man.
All right, we'll talk next week, and hopefully we'll be on sometime at some point. But everybody listening, just keep checking the website for the news and notes, and you'll see when we'll be back. And enjoy the show tonight, guys. You guys take care.
All righty. Good night, guys.
Good night.
Good night.
We thank you for listening to the Tribecast, a production brought to you by GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com and the GWH Radio Network. Stay tuned to GWH for nostalgia, upcoming events, and more. As always, GeorgiaWrestlingHistory.com thanks you for your continued support.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.